Welcome to the Real Birth Podcast, the show where real parents share real birth stories and get really honest about how it went. You might be a first-time expectant parent, or on your eighth baby. Perhaps you're a birth worker, or maybe you just love learning about birth. Whoever you are welcome here. This podcast aims to educate and empower listeners through the real stories of mums and dads. I'm Lucy Hill. I'm a doula, a mum of a toddler, and a complete birth nerd. Join me as I invite all kinds of parents to share their stories of pregnancy, birth, and beyond. I hope you enjoy this week's episode. Hello, welcome back to the Real Birth Podcast. In case you haven't already heard, this series, the show, is sponsored by Bridge House Pilates, who are offering an exclusive 20% discount off of their online, on-demand postnatal Pilates course. Try saying that after you've had a drink. The 6 weeks Pilates program is taught by Megan, who is just absolutely lovely. Being from Texas originally, I am a little bit obsessed with her accent. Designed to fit around your life as a busy new parent. Help to rebuild strength after birth, however your baby came into the world, through bite-sized exercises and relaxation videos, all available from the comfort of home and whenever you finally get a moment to yourself. You can find the link to Bridge House Pilates course on our social media, in the show notes, or by going to bridgehousepilates.com and using the code REALBIRTH20 for 20% off. This week, my guest is Laura, who shares the birth of her son after two heartbreaking miscarriages. Just so you know, Laura and I are talking about these losses in depth at the start of this episode, so you can always skip a little bit ahead if you're not feeling in the right place to listen to that just now. Laura was encouraged to accept an induction after her waters broke before her labour began properly. And although it's not something she really wanted, Laura did make the decision to have an epidural to allow her to rest properly. I will let Laura tell the rest of her story, as she has some really useful advice to share too as she reflects on her birth 1 year on. Well, welcome Laura to the podcast. It's absolutely lovely to have you here. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Before we go into your pregnancy and birth story, do you want to just tell everybody a little bit about who you are, who's in your family, what it is you do?
Yeah, so my name's Laura. I live with my husband, Alex, and our son, River, who just turned one a few days ago. My husband has a 10-year-old daughter as well, so she lives with us, Izzy. She lives with us on the weekends, and our dog, Roo, who is the baby is obsessed with. So at the weekends especially, it's a pretty packed house. But
oh well, happy birthday to little one for very recently.
Thank you.
Yeah, that first year is pretty crazy, but it's also, I find, quite a nice time where people start to think about, oh, you know, it's a bit poignant, isn't it, that year mark where you can think about the birth story and the achievement of what you've done over the last year. So
yeah, I think I feel like I've only just sort of got the headspace back to be able to think about what's happened the past year. I've been thinking about it a lot actually, and yeah, now just seems like a good time to sort of, like you said, to go over it and sort of remember what actually happened.
It's quite common, I think, that sort of year mark. So tell me about when you started your journey towards becoming pregnant and having a baby. Is that something that you had thought about before, and was it quite an intentional process for you, or was it something a bit more unexpected?
It was very much intentional. We talked about it quite a lot, and it was just after we got engaged, which was 2019, and we fell pregnant for the first time. And we were super excited. It was, scary, but really exciting. And unfortunately, we had a miscarriage about 7 weeks in to that pregnancy. So that was, you know, it was a bit of a shock, but I also had a couple of friends that had miscarriages. So, you know, it was, I knew it was something that could happen. I just think you don't expect it to.
No, but you don't. I think first time as well, when you're young and you're just kind of, you think, well, I'm young and healthy, first time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, you don't expect it. But that was tough to go through. But you know, we got through it together, and we thought we still wanted to try again. So we kind of started trying pretty much immediately. And then we got pregnant a couple of months later. And unfortunately, the same thing happened. It was a bit more to it this time. We I ended up in hospital with suspected ectopic pregnancy.
Okay.
And they couldn't find the pregnancy, so they knew I
Okay.
was pregnant. But they said that they didn't know where the baby was, which I'd never heard of, never knew that that could happen. So yeah, I was in hospital just in case they needed to go down for surgery if it was ectopic.
And did that, if you're happy to talk about it, did that process begin because you began bleeding or you had some pain, or what was it that alerted you to the fact that this pregnancy wasn't going ahead?
So yeah, it was similar to the first time. I was having pains and started bleeding a little bit, and then the bleeding stopped. So I thought, oh, okay, maybe it's not happening again. But then obviously, when I went in for a scan, they then said, and they did blood tests and said, you're definitely pregnant, but we can't see what's happening. And I think again, that was something I hadn't thought about and didn't really understand properly what it really meant. So when they obviously admitted me into the hospital, it was really scary because I thought, well, it was, you might need surgery. We'll see. And it was kind of a bit of a waiting game. So I was in for a few days, just waiting. And then they did more bloods and saw that obviously the hormones were coming down. So they said that there was no need for surgery. And then I started bleeding anyway. So they said, yeah,
Okay.
it's another miscarriage, and that's what's happening. Yeah, I mean, it was really tough. And then we just decided to sort of give it a little while. I think, which is what a lot of people do in that situation, because it's a lot to
It's
kind
a
of
lot
get
to
through.
go through emotionally, physically, all of it. It's a lot to process.
So we sort of waited a year or so and just plodding along and got back into things normally. And then we got married 2020, right in the middle of
Yeah, I was
COVID.
going to say, thinking about your timeline, we're kind of heading into real COVID times here. So, okay.
So it was a
So,
very small wedding
yeah.
happening. And that was October. So we decided to start trying after that. And we found out sort of really early February that we were expecting River. And I think, again, with a lot of people, when you go through miscarriages, you're very aware really early that you're pregnant. So it was maybe 4 weeks or so. And then it's a lot of waiting then.
It's so long.
If you
So
find out
long.
later, you think, okay, maybe I've got past the bit where I'm going to be worried. But
And how did you handle that first kind of, I imagine, like many people, you were waiting for some kind of point where you'd feel more comfortable, maybe 12 weeks for a lot of people. Did you find that first trimester quite difficult and kind of just getting through?
yeah, we did. We were both very anxious, and we spent quite a lot of money getting private scans. We must have had about four just to make sure everything was okay. And when we first heard the heartbeat, it was a massive weight off. And then we kind of went back a couple more times just to check in.
Obviously, you know that the pregnancy was progressing okay. You felt slightly reassured by your scans and everything. How did you feel once you'd got past that first trimester, I mean, hurdle, so to speak? And had you announced your pregnancy to anybody, or how did that kind of mid part of your pregnancy go?
We told family just because, again, we were very really aware it might not go as we planned. So we thought we'd wait a bit longer to kind of announce it to friends and things. So I think it was about sort of 20 weeks that we told anyone else. Like I said, we were anxious, but for some reason I had like a I'm very one of those people that I have a feeling, a gut feeling, and I like to go with it. And I had a feeling that everything was just going to be okay this time. And no matter how anxious I got, having that in the back of my head, it just really, really helped me through. And my husband sort of felt the same as well. So, we did allow ourselves to be excited, which was lovely because I was worried we were going to miss out on the excitement of it. So yeah, we did let ourselves get excited, and the pregnancy was relatively easy, I think. I was really, really lucky. I was tired and I felt sick, but that's so normal. Other than that, I was really lucky, and I have quite bad health anxiety, and I've suffered a long time with it. But for some reason, I think I've felt the least anxious that I've felt in a number of years in my pregnancy, which was
Yeah.
wonderful. That was such a nice feeling.
But that's a relief as well, not to have to stress as much as you thought maybe you were going to when you
Absolutely,
were
yeah,
pregnant.
because I thought it was going to be the complete opposite. I thought, oh, I'm going to worry about every little thing, but actually I kind of just, I got through it with my anxiety not as high as I thought, which was great.
Through those appointments, what was the situation with your husband then? Was he able to join you for any of those appointments, or was COVID still restricting all that access for him?
He was able to come, I think, as well, because we did a lot of the private scans. He was able to come to those anyway. We allowed one other person, but when that we were still allowed one person in with the sort of 12-week scan and the 20-week scan as well. So yeah,
That's good.
he was able to come to everything, which was really, really nice
Yeah, that's
to have him
lovely.
there. Yeah.
So, what plans had you made between yourselves for the upcoming birth? Had you had a talk about what it is that you would like to feel like, to achieve, or anything you knew you didn't want? And I'm really interested when I ask people that question, kind of where that's come from. You know, some people say, oh, I definitely want this, or I definitely don't want this because of, you know, I saw this thing or I read this thing. So, yeah, what were your plans, and why do you think you'd kind of come to those decisions?
So we did talk about it a lot, and just before I say what the plans were, we weren't under any illusion that it was definitely going to go the way that we wanted it to. We knew it could, other things could happen, but we did have an idea of what we wanted. I definitely didn't want an epidural because of my health anxiety.
Yeah.
That would have just been another thing on top that would have put a bit more worry on me. We decided that if we could, we would want to go to a midwife-led unit and have a water birth. That was the dream.
Yeah.
And we wanted it to be sort of as, I wanted it to be as natural as possible with my body. And yeah, that was, we did a hypnobirthing course,
Okay.
which, it's either, I feel like that when you say hypnobirthing, it's some people are either like, oh, interested, or no, not at all.
Yeah.
And
How did you
we,
find it?
we loved it. We absolutely loved it. I would recommend it, especially if you suffer from anxiety or just need, ways of getting through anxious moments and things like that. So, yeah, we learned a lot about the science behind the body and ways of breathing techniques and things like that of going through labor. And my husband sort of made a lot of notes, and he was very aware that if things didn't go how we wanted them to, that he would have to make decisions maybe as well. So it was really good. We really enjoyed that. And we kind of had in our head that we would be ready for this lovely water birth with music on in the background, and that was what we wanted.
Yeah. I do think hypnobirthing can be really useful for a lot of people in loads of different scenarios. You know, you can use it, like you said, if things don't go the way that you hope in the moment. To have somebody with you who's also got those tools is really
Absolutely.
helpful. So it's not just you on your own going, oh, well, that idea's out the window. So sod that. I won't do that anymore. You know,
Yeah, that's
you've
it.
still got the ability somewhere in you to maybe think, okay, not like planned, but you know, let's bring it back down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. So, how did the last kind of few weeks of your pregnancy go, and how were you feeling?
I was fine. I was okay. I was uncomfortable and ready to sort of have him out, but there was no signs of anything going wrong or anything like that. It all seemed okay. And so my waters broke on a Friday night around midnight, and that was actually my due date. So we went into the hospital, and they'd said your waters have broke, but nothing's happening, nothing's ready to happen yet. So we'll send you home and come back in 24 hours.
Okay.
So we did that, and just kind of went for some walks, did the usual, trying to get things
Try and
moving in
keep
them.
chilled, but also you're trying to do all these things to help things start.
Exactly. So yeah, we did that, and then we went back in sort of the Saturday night. On the Friday in the afternoon, I started to get some contractions, and so I just kind of was at home and got through those. And then when we went back in, they'd said again, still nothing has really progressed, so we're gonna have to induce you. which
Okay.
it is what it is, but it was I was quite disappointed because it meant straight away we weren't able to go to the midwife unit. So that was kind of the first thing of let's not really go into how I thought it would
Yeah.
be, but so I had a drip. So that didn't come until they actually had no room. So as my husband described it, he said they put us in the janitor's closet and it basically there was a bed and the tiniest chair, and that was it. We could fit like that was all we could fit in the room, and just us, just while we were waiting for room in a delivery suite. Obviously, because I wasn't in the delivery suite, I wasn't allowed anything else other than paracetamol, and my contractions were pretty bad at this point. So we were in there for about 12 hours in that room and not really getting a lot of updates. And I, after all this time, they said maybe about 1 centimeter dilated.
You know, I find that really hard. You know, when people sort of are told, okay, we recommend an induction now, so let's do that. You kind of come to grips with it. You know, that's my plan's changed, and then you have to wait like in a box basically. And actually, I just feel like wouldn't it have been better for you to go home for those 12 hours and then just come in when they said, yeah, we've got a bed. You know, it just doesn't make any sense to me. But it sounds like you did really well with what you had. You know, you had that, you had each other. Did you find the paracetamol did anything for you? Did you
No,
notice? I mean, I feel like that's a stupid question.
I hoped it would, but no, unfortunately, it really didn't. I do agree that I felt like because I had Alex there, I could get through
Yeah.
it. Yeah, it was really tough, and you know, like you said, if they had said maybe go home, but because they said we need to induce you because your waters have broken so long ago that it's, you know, it could infection and things like that, but then made us wait. I think that's what sort of frustrated me the most, because I was like, well, you sort of said it's a bit of a worry, but then still made us wait. So yeah, I did struggle with that.
It's just playing on your mind, isn't it? While you're there.
Exactly.
So they eventually kind of came through, I imagine, and said that they had a space for you to go through. And so were you kind of having regular contractions at this point?
Yeah, I
Okay, and
was.
they still wanted to induce you even though you were already in labor.
Yes, yeah, that was
Okay.
still the plan because it had gone on for so long
Okay,
now,
they wanted to
and I
like
was
kickstart things a bit faster to.
exact, and again, I was only, they said it was between 1 and 2 centimeters, so it wasn't really happening fast enough. So after about 12 hours in that room, a bed sort of finally came free.
Okay.
And then obviously the plan was to induce me. However, they checked and they realized that my waters hadn't broke fully.
Okay.
So they broke my waters, and they then said, "Do you want to be?" They sort of said, "We can induce you sort of straight away." And I said, "Is there any way you can leave me a little bit just to see if you breaking my waters would bring it on naturally?"
Yeah.
So we had about an hour, and the contractions really, really got bad after that. And then they checked, and unfortunately, I still hadn't dilated anymore. So they were like, "You know, we can't leave it any longer. We are going to have to induce you now." So yeah, that was a bit of a bummer, because I thought we kind of had a second chance, and I thought, oh, you know, maybe we can it'll
Yeah.
be na a bit
I
more
think
natural.
I'm really surprised that it sounds like you were starting to contract on your own. I'm just really surprised that there was any need for anybody to do anything at that point. It's like, I know the plans have changed and you're there, but yeah, like it's happening. What else do they need? Like it's happening, you're doing it.
I know,
It's
clearly
really hard, isn't
my body
it?
wasn't doing it fast enough for them to be satisfied with that, and I don't know whether it's because it had been so long. I don't know. I then got to the point where I was in a lot of pain, and the gas and air wasn't helping and
Okay, yeah, I wondered if you'd
didn't do
tried
anything.
any of that and how you found it, because people give mixed reviews.
So I like I said, obviously with the health anxiety, I wanted at the least sort of medication possible. But then, you know, when you realise actually how painful it
Yeah.
is, the gas and air, it just made me sick.
And it also, I think, The gas and air can give you a bit of a sense of being slightly out of control. It's a bit kind of like
Absolutely.
woozy for some people.
Yeah.
And actually, if you do suffer a bit with worry, then that can almost make it a bit worse. And it's like, I'd rather have a clear head for some
Yeah,
people.
absolutely.
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but you
No,
know what I mean?
that is sort of comes a hand in hand when you suffer with anxiety. Is for me personally, one of the worst parts is when you do feel out of control and sort of having that feeling. I think it helped in the way that, it kind of takes your mind off it because you feel like that. But yeah, it didn't really work for me, and I thought, right, okay, well, I've tried it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you've tried it, you know what works for you, and you can make a different decision. You can't make all your
Definitely.
decisions before the moment. You just need to know what's right for you. So had they started giving you the drip at this point?
Sort of after having the drip, the contractions were coming thick and fast, and I started to really struggle. And I held off as long as I could, thinking I'll see if I can do my breathing exercises and get through it as much as I could. But it was just too much. So at this point, my husband sort of talked to me about, he discussed with the doctors about an epidural. They'd said they think it was the best thing. So my husband kind of talked to me about it, and he said, I know you're worried about it, but do you realistically think you can do maybe another 12 hours of this? And at that point, I said, no, I can't. So I eventually agreed to have the epidural. Yeah, I was obviously worried about, and but I know it's common, and
Yeah, it's still okay to be frightened of it.
well, yeah. Yeah, it
And was there an anaesthetist available to talk to you and do that with you? Because I think it's a really big thing when you say you don't want something and then you actually then you make a decision and you go, you know what, no, I'm okay with this now. And it's like you're ready, you've made that decision, and then sometimes there's no one available to do that straight away. So it can be a bit of a
If yeah, waiting
jarring.
for that is the hardest. Luckily there was one available.
Oh, that's
I
good.
think he was sort of in between things, so he said he could just sort of come in and do it straight away. So that was good. So I was sort of prepared and ready. The only thing was, obviously, I was having contractions through. So every time I had a contraction, I had to sort of shout, and he had to stop what he was trying to do. And unfortunately, and I hadn't sort of heard of this happening before to anyone else, so it's not something that I could have prepared for. But unfortunately, when he was trying to put the needle in my back, it was hurting me, so we had to try it. So it took about five attempts,
Gosh.
and at this point I was very distressed and I was really upset, and my husband was trying to stay calm just to sort of help me. But it was really tough, and the anaesthetist behind me, I could hear him getting frustrated, which didn't really help me. And anyway, so they decided they had to go higher up the back because they tried too many times in the same spot. And luckily, I think it was the fifth attempt that worked. So once that was sort of out of the way.
Yeah, I think it's really important that you mention that though, because I think people think, oh, whether it's something that they have pre-planned or whether it's something that happens in the moment, you think, okay, I'll have an epidural, and that it's just kind of like someone walks in and like does it in your back and that's that. Like it's really tricky. And for some people, it does take quite a while. So yeah, I think it's really important that you talk about that because people need to be maybe prepared that it might not be kind of a quick in and out jobby.
No, exactly. And I also don't want to sort of make it seem, everything sort of seems quite negative, and I'm like, you need to prepare for, how horrible this is, because it's not, I think, to be honest with you, I think I was unlucky. And the anaesthetist did say that this happens maybe once in 100, and he said, unfortunately, you're that one at the moment. So but it, again, in the moment, it just needs to be done. So there's not really a lot else you can do. But once that had happened, and I kind of had a minute afterwards to cry and kind of come to terms with actually how quite stressful that was, that had calmed down, and then obviously there was no more pain.
Yeah. And so how did you feel? Kind of, yeah, you've taken a minute. Oh my God, that was really distressing and awful and rubbish. But I imagine then there comes a moment of quiet, actually, where maybe not so many people are around you in the room.
And you are not making any noise or less noise. Did you kind of have that moment of peace where you were able to start recollecting yourself?
I did. So at the point of when I was having the epidural, that there was two midwives sort of holding each of my arms. One stood next to them, and then the anaesthetist, and then another doctor. So there was a lot of people around me. And after that, there it was just the midwife and my husband and me. And obviously, like I said, the pain had gone, and I just had a couple of hours of that was hard, but I need to get through this. And I kind of had time to collect myself, I think. And yeah, my husband was, I think he managed to get about 10 minutes of sleep, I think. At this point, it was I think we must have been about 36 hours without any sleep at this point.
Yeah, I was going to ask whether the epidural allowed you to sleep or were you too kind of in
No,
your head at
because
that point?
yeah, I was way too in my head, and there was no chance of me sleeping, I don't think. Yeah. That I just thought maybe afterwards I'll be able to sleep. Yeah, so no, it was my husband sort of led on the chair a little bit and had a bit of a nap, but that was all he managed.
So you had your epidural in and physically you were feeling a lot more comfortable. How did your labour progress from there?
It was probably about 3 hours later. The midwife checked, and she sort of said this was about this was about 10:30 on the Sunday. So obviously we came in Saturday evening, so this was Sunday evening, and she sort of said, right, you're at 10,
Wow.
we can try pushing. And I thought, well, how, after everything that had happened up until that point, and I thought, and now all of a sudden it's like, right, okay, we're ready, you can try. Which was like really bizarre, and especially because I couldn't feel anything. I was like, I sort of said to her, how do I know I'm pushing?
And was there an option at all? I mean, everywhere is going to be different, but was there an option for you to kind of ask for less medication so you could feel something, or is that not something you actually wanted?
I think at that point I was okay with how I was feeling at that
Yeah.
point. I'd gotten used to the fact I couldn't feel my legs. I'd gotten used to, yeah, I sort of felt somewhat comfortable
Yeah, you
with.
almost don't want to go backwards from that when you're there
Exactly.
and you're happy there.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. And I thought, right, well, we'll just go with how it is now.
Okay.
She said to start pushing, so we kind of had a few contractions. I tried, and it must have been about 20 minutes later, just as I thought, this is it, we've gone through quite a lot, now's the time, just me and my husband, our son's going to come and it'll be great. And unfortunately, the midwife said she had to go and get another doctor because the baby looked as if he was sort of facing to the side.
Okay.
At this point, two other doctors came in and sort of had a feel, had a look, and it was almost like something out of a TV program. And they looked at each other, and one of them pressed the alarm and threw some scrubs at my husband and said, we're really sorry, we need to go to theatre straight away. And it just, when I think back now, obviously I was so in the thick of it, you just go with it. But thinking back, I just think I got to this point and it was so tough. And then it was almost as if someone just said, right, here's the next thing that's gonna go wrong. So they sort of unplugged the machines and everything and wheeled me down to theatre, and they said, we're gonna try forceps,
Okay.
but we don't necessarily think it'll work, so it may have to be a C-section.
And were you given much information about why they were taking you off to do this? Because was it because your baby was slightly malpositioned, turned to one side rather than, did they kind of explain, well, this is why we need to do this?
They'd explained that he was slightly facing the wrong way. But if I'm completely honest with you, I don't really understand what the implications of that would have been. And I don't know whether it was such a rush that there was no time to sort of sit down and go through it bit by bit. They obviously knew they needed to get him out. But if I'm completely honest, even to this day, I still don't really understand. I understand that he was facing sort of slightly the wrong way, but I don't understand what
that
that
would have
meant.
meant for you.
No,
Yeah. Okay.
So no idea really.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, another big kind of whirlwind. Okay, so they took you through to theatre and you've already got your epidural in place, I suppose. So they're able to start with forceps. And were they then kind of telling you when to push and they were working on pulling?
Yeah, exactly. So
Okay.
It was, you know, sort of that moment of just seeing the bright lights and then, you know, 10, 15 people sort of looking over you. And yeah, the one thing that I was glad about was that I'd already had the epidural in, so they could just pump some more in.
Yes, yeah.
So that was something. Yeah, so the midwife was sort of feeling my tummy for contractions, and the surgeon, she just said, when she tells you you've got a contraction, you need to push as hard as you can, and they'll try with the forceps. So the first attempt failed, and then she said, we'll try again. She said, but if it doesn't work, it's getting to the point now where if this one doesn't work, we're going to have to just do a C-section and to get the baby out. So my husband said that he thought I was the Hulk for a minute, because I don't know how, but I just mustered as much strength as I had left in me. And I just thought, I'm not going to have another thing after this. Like, this is when the baby's coming out.
You got all your, like, when mama bears lift cars off of strength,
yeah,
you know?
That's it.
Okay.
Yeah, I never thought of it like that, but actually that was how I felt. And I just thought, I'm, you know, there's not going to be another thing. This is it now. Yeah, I just did whatever I could, and he came out.
Amazing.
Which was wonderful. And, you know, that
was
moment
that a bit of a shock after everything kind of being so many stumbling blocks in your way? Was it a bit like, oh my, okay, I did that. Like, I actually did it.
Yeah. And obviously, because I you know, I couldn't feel anything, but what I could in a way feel was just the release of pressure.
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh my God, that he's actually out. And
yeah,
you know, it was unbelievable, really. I didn't know, you know, and I sort of looked up at my husband and he was absolutely in tears, and he's not a crier, you
it's
know.
a lot
And
for
I
him
think,
to it's a lot for him to watch, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, you know, he sort of said after the last quite nearly we were what were we up to nearly 48 hours or something ridiculous, he said, I was after all that time of me keeping it together so that you could try and keep it together, he said, everything just came out of me. And, you know,
Yeah.
as soon as I saw River, that was it. Like, it was just, everything was released. So yeah, so no, that moment was, although drugged up, it was amazing.
And other than obviously everything that's happened, like, were you feeling okay in your mind, as in you were there and you could see him, or were you just like, or were you kind of feeling so exhausted that it was really hard to keep your head together?
I think a bit of both. I mean, I was aware, you know, that I had this baby on me and it was amazing and he was here. But at that point, I think I had just gone, right, okay, it's done. Like, he's out with me. And sort of, I think that's when my anxiety came into play a little bit more again. I was so, so exhausted. And for me, being really tired or, you know, really fatigued is a trigger for my anxiety. And at that point, it kind of, I was looking around thinking, okay, I feel like I'm in a bubble right now. Like, you know, nothing feels real. I'm sort of, this is just a lot to take in. Yeah, but the moment, you know, I do still remember the moment. And, you know, the surgeon sort of rushed off because she had to go and do another surgery. And one of the doctors said, you know, can we put a song on for you?
Oh, that's lovely.
While we're sort of, you know, checking on your son. And yeah, so we had a song played, which was the first song that he kicked to when my husband sung it when he was in my tummy. So
oh,
that was lovely.
That's really nice that somebody thought to ask you that, actually, because in that moment you'd probably be like, would never have done that yourself.
No.
And so he was able to come to your chest, was he? He was well.
Yes. Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, he was okay. He sort of came straight to me, and he was very, very bruised. I st if I'm honest, I think the fact that forceps are still used is completely barbaric, but
Yeah, it's a practice that hasn't really been updated since it began kind of many, many years ago. And you think, surely there's a way we can do this in a kinder manner. But, you know, sometimes people
you
stick
are
to what
that
they know,
vessel
don't
and
they?
that baby needs to come out of you, so however they've got to do it, you know. So I think that was a bit heartbreaking for me, just seeing how bruised his little face was. That I found that really difficult, you know. After that, we went sort of back up to recovery, and I think I managed about 40 minute nap, and my husband gave me a cup of tea and some toast, which was amazing.
And did you know that you were having a boy before he came?
Yes, we did
Yeah,
know. Yeah,
lovely.
we felt we wanted to find out. I wanted to be able to say he or she when I was talking about my baby. So yeah, we both decided to find out. Yeah,
So
it was
how long did you stay in hospital?
So we were my husband had to leave because he couldn't come to the ward with me.
Right.
So we were in for about, I want to say, about a day afterwards. And I tried sort of breastfeeding, and he was okay. He kind of latched on a bit, but I didn't get a lot of advice about breastfeeding. It was just all kind of a bit of a try it and see kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a real shame. I think we are really lacking in this country in that kind of support in a hospital setting, where actually a lot of people in those situations need maybe more support than some others.
100%,
Especially, I think, you know, if you've been through a birth that wasn't necessarily what you'd planned, and also your baby's been through a lot, you know, physically as well. So actually to have that support to make sure that that is okay and that you both leave happy with the way you're feeding, however that is really important. And I think that is something that we really fall short in this country. So had you planned and wanted to breastfeed throughout your pregnancy? Was that something you'd already thought about?
I said I wanted to try, and that was, you know, all I could have hoped for. I wasn't if it's really painful, I'm going to power through and I'm going to do it anyway. And I also wasn't, oh God, no. So I just thought, I'll give it a go. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And it seemed fine. Like, you know, I didn't have an issue. And it did get to one point where a midwife sort of said, she got quite frustrated at me, which really upset me. And she said, you know, he's really hungry, but he's not latching properly. You're not feeding him properly. And,
oh, that's,
you know,
so damaging to somebody who's just been through something really difficult and
I really struggled.
And has not slept. And when you're a new parent in those first days, you just take everything so personally, because it is so personal. And for someone to insinuate that you're doing something wrong when they're not teaching you how to do it, you've never had to do it before. It's not a skill that we're like born knowing how to do. You know, that's just really unfair.
Yeah.
Really unfair.
And I think, again, I haven't really thought back on it too much, but the aftercare, and I don't want to say, you know, the midwives were terrible. It wasn't anything like that. But unfortunately, my experience wasn't great.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm absolutely positive there are many midwives that are fantastic, and, you know, what they do is amazing. But I, unfortunately, with the afterwards in the ward, didn't have the best experience. And that was something that I found really upsetting.
Yeah, I think I think you're not alone there.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
Yeah. So were you able to establish breastfeeding at the hospital? I know a lot of trusts will want you to be comfortable and confident feeding before they discharge you, which is kind of, I feel like, a bit of a paradox, really, if they're not kind of helping you to do that. So it almost makes you feel like, for some parents, I know that they have felt pressured into feeding in an alternative way that they didn't really want to do, just in order to get discharged. So yeah, how did that go for you?
We kind of muddled through, and, you know, he seemed to be feeding. I wasn't in pain, and I just kind of took that as a win. And if I'm completely honest, I just wanted to be out of that hospital. I'd wanted to be at home. I wanted my son to be at home, and I just needed to get out.
You do whatever it takes, don't you?
Oh my gosh. My husband came to pick me up at, I think it was about midnight. And I just, you know, they said, why don't you wait till the morning? And I just said to the midwife, I was like, just get me out of here. Like, I don't want to be here anymore. And you know, they'd said all the checks were fine on River, so I said, please just let me go home. And you know, we kind of got home and he seemed to be breastfeeding fine. It all seemed to be okay. And then we went for our checkup 2 days later with the local midwife, and they said he had jaundice, so we were admitted back into hospital for a week. So that was sort of the next thing. And it sort of, by that point, it just seemed like one thing after another. And you know, this tiny baby was just going through so much,
And
and I couldn't
were
help
you
her.
able to stay with him while he was in hospital?
Yes, so I was with him. My husband was only able to come in sort of the 2 hour visits, which was just horrendous. You know, sort of being on my own, not knowing what I was doing. River was in pain, and they had to put him in the sort of the incubator for the jaundice, but he just absolutely would not stay in there at all. He was screaming to the point of, you know, I just didn't know what to do. I was an absolute mess. And I had countless different midwives coming up and saying he needs to go in there. And I said, okay. But the last midwife put him in and he was absolutely screaming. So she got him out and then said she'd be back and never came back. Then another midwife would come and do the same and then leave. So I was just there with the screaming baby that there's someone kept telling me had to go in the incubator, but no one was helping me.
That's
So
really hard.
yeah, I just didn't know what to do. And then at that point, because he was screaming so much and was struggling to feed by that point, he had to go and see the doctor in NICU, and the doctor sort of gave him some medication and said he thinks that he is still traumatized from the birth, and he'd had sort of bruises. His bruises were still really bad on his head and on his face, and he said he thinks that that's contributing to why he's struggling so much, as well as the jaundice.
And also, babies are programmed to want to be literally on their mums. Like that is biologically what they need. So I don't think it's unusual or, surprising at all that your baby was really distressed not being on you. That's totally biologically normal and really, really hard for you. Like that physical, I know it's a physical pull, like to have to put them somewhere else.
It's something I've never ever felt before. I can't even explain it.
It is. It's so physical, that sensation of them having to be put somewhere else that you don't want them to be. And how long did it take before they were satisfied that he was well again after the jaundice?
So we were in for about 5 days, and by that point I ended up with one midwife who was absolutely lovely, and she got a billy blanket for him so that he didn't have to go in the incubator. So they just sort of wrapped him in the billy blanket, and then I just held him the entire time.
So, can you just tell us a bit more about what that is?
It's sort of like, if you can imagine like an electric blanket, and it has the lights on it, the same as inside the incubator. But what they do is sort of lay him on that so that the lights are right up against his skin, and then wrap him in blankets so that there is still some of that light getting to him. And then I did not sleep. I just held him while he slept so that he would stay in that blanket. And after a couple of days of him being in that blanket, they said, right, you know, we're happy that it's going the way it should be.
I find it absolutely maddening that that was not the first option.
Yes, no, it
Why
wasn't. It
was that not the
was.
first option? Because he would have been calmer. You would have been calmer. You cannot, like, as an adult, let alone a tiny baby, you can't heal properly when you're really, really stressed and really, really distressed. So, like, him being in that blanket was probably like, oh, thank God, finally. Like, I'm with
Someone's
my
listening to
mum.
me.
I feel safe and now I can sleep and I can rest and I can get better. Oh, that is so maddening. I'm really sorry that that was only introduced to you after, I imagine, several days of him, being away from you.
Yeah, and I sort of felt the same. I almost said, why is it taken midwife after midwife, and you're the only one that suggested? And I said that to her. You know, I said, why are you the only one that suggested this, and why are you the only one that's come back to help me when all the other ones seem to have just disappeared? So yeah, I mean, I was super, super grateful for her.
Well, I think that again, that I think that if anybody's listening who maybe, you know, ends up with a baby who does have jaundice or anything like that, or knows somebody, to know about that blanket as an option.
Absolutely.
It's so important. I don't think I really even understood that. So thank you for telling me about that, because I feel like now if I'm working with somebody who has that, you know, situation,
yeah,
to be able to say from the get-go, I would like to request the blanket rather than the cot situation.
Yeah, exactly.
How amazing is that if people could just do that?
Yeah. And I mean, it took them a while to find one to be able to use. I think they had to go and get it from NICU, but it took a while. But I don't know why that's not presented as an option if your baby is clearly struggling.
Okay, so you were there for sort of 5 days, and then finally were you able to go home?
Finally, we were able to go home, and there was another midwife that did help me with the breastfeeding and sort of said that his latch looked okay. So I was able to keep breastfeeding, and we ended up breastfeeding for 8 months.
That's amazing. So I was going to say, did that whole experience of being in the hospital and him having to be treated for his jaundice, did that interfere with your feeding, or were you able to continue that? It sounds like you were.
We were able to continue. He did have to have a few formulas just to get some food in him, because he was obviously so uncomfortable that he wasn't eating properly. So we kind of stuck with that and had one formula from then on, but everything else was breastfeeding. Yeah. So yeah, we managed to do it. So it was great.
If you know, you were able to carry on for 8 months, which is incredible. So
it was great. Yeah. We were really lucky.
Yeah. So how did those first few weeks/months go when you were finally at home and nobody had to be in hospital anymore? It must have been a bit like, oh, this is life now.
And
for your husband as well. You know, he's been so detached from all this stuff that you've had to
go through. And he was sort of hated having to go home and knowing that we were in the hospital. But it was a blur, I think, the next couple of months, because he had colic was the next thing. It didn't stop there. So we basically lived and slept downstairs for the next 2 months, because he didn't sleep and cried all the time. And
and you do what you do to survive, don't you? It doesn't matter
exactly
what it is.
Exactly. Yeah. And my husband was fantastic. He, because obviously I was still struggling from the episiotomy.
Mm-hmm.
My husband sort of looked after River, fed me my medicines, made me tea constantly. But we got there in the end. And yeah, he had tongue tie as well, which was something else.
Okay. Did you have that kind of revised, and did you have any sort of treatment for that?
Yes. He had the tongue tie cut. Okay. In the end.
You found that him having that cut, did that make a big improvement to your situation feeding?
Absolutely. Yeah, it did.
That's really good. Okay.
Yeah, it was
good.
Great.
So did you have family and kind of a support network around you for those early couple of months? Because it is really intense. Did you have much support?
Unfortunately, my family all live quite far away.
Okay.
And with it still being sort of COVID and with him being poorly, we were quite reluctant to have a lot of visitors, so we kind of just battened down the hatches in our own little world and just got through it, just us really.
I can understand that. It was a really weird time.
Definitely. That's what we decided. We thought we had family visit now and then, but for the most part we just wanted to get through that first bit on our own.
So kind of looking back on your whole birth experience, obviously things didn't necessarily go the way that you had planned. How do you feel about everything now, given that you are, you're a year on from that and you're looking back? Do you have any kind of things that are unresolved for you, or are you feeling kind of at peace that that's what happened and you did what you needed to do?
I think it's a really tough question, actually, because I think a lot of it I still haven't really dealt with sort of what happened. And like I said at the beginning, I'm just starting to sort of bring that to the forefront now and get used to everything. But now he's happy and healthy, and I think it's sort of that time that we're able to deal with that and move past it now. I also don't want it to sound, unfortunately we were unlucky and had a lot of things go wrong. However, the hypnobirthing really did help us, and and we got through it together.
If you were to give some advice either to past you or to somebody who is about to have a baby about the things that really were important for you or things that you might advise people to do or ask for, what are kind of the things that you might tell your past self or a friend to kind of really think about when going into their births?
I think I know a lot of people say don't have a plan because nothing will ever go to plan. I personally disagree with that because I think it might actually go to plan. I think it really helped us have an image in our head of what we did want. We were able, because we had that in our heads and we had these coping mechanisms, we were able to get through what we actually did go through. I think have an idea of what you want. I'm not saying it has to be definite, like this has to happen, but have a little plan in your head because it's nice to talk about as well with your partner. With being in the hospital, ask questions, as many questions as you can, or your partner, ask the doctors as many questions, whatever they're suggesting, find out as much as possible about it. Does it have to happen? Does that need to happen, or what are their alternatives, if there is any?
I think there's two really good pieces of advice, and I 100% agree on the making a plan for your birth point you made. Birth can go 1,000 ways and we're never going to be able to tell which way they go. Mm-hmm. But I think the power that comes from making a plan is knowing the things that could happen or the things that you would want in an ideal situation. So you made a plan, and even though some of the things didn't work out, in order to achieve the original plan, that led you down the road of hypnobirthing. And then it made you think about the things, other things maybe, or maybe the role that your husband could take. And I'm sure that that was helpful. And I would kind of even go one step further and say, okay, well, if you're going to make a plan for your ideal birth, make a plan for your not ideal birth. So if you can make a plan to say, right, if it all goes to shit and I have to go and do this and I end up with XYZ that I said I was never going to have, how can I make that less devastating? And how can I learn about those things? Which I think really leads really nicely into your other piece of advice, which is probably by questioning everything and by saying, absolutely, okay, well, this is what I ideally wanted and I'm not getting that, but now I'm here and I'm getting this other thing. Can you tell me why you need to do that? Is that really necessary? And if it is, that's fine. But could you tell me so that I come away from this experience really knowing why everything happened and that I was in control of it?
Because that's being in control. That is 100% it, because we just put everything in the doctor's hands. And, absolutely, they're great. They know what they're doing. But you also want to know what they're doing.
And also it's their bread and butter, right? So they're just doing it because they do it and that's what they do every day. And actually, this is your like once in a lifetime experience. You don't give birth to that particular baby again, So you want to be able to say, well, why are you doing that? And actually maybe they will say, oh, sorry, because of this. Like, but they hadn't even thought to tell you that because that's just their job. And then actually maybe asking those questions, there's going to be the occasional situation where somebody goes, oh, do you know what, maybe we could try something else actually. Oh, I didn't know that was important to you. I didn't know that you wanted that, so maybe we could try. So asking a simple question. I think birth is not a time to be like nicey, oh yes, okay, that's fine. It's like it's a time to go, oh really, why is that? Because you should know everything, you deserve to know everything. So
let's not be British about it. Let's exactly actually ask questions.
So no, I think those are probably two of the biggest pieces of advice that I would give too. So I think that's really valuable and really useful information for people. So thank you.
I feel like sometimes when I explain my birth and my situation, it all sounds pretty horrific, but I don't want it to come across like that, because it was a means to an end and I got my baby, and things might not go to plan, but you do it, you get through it, and you can get through it, and you will.
I think you're right, you can get through it. But the other thing I would say is I believe that actually if your experience was like not great, it's okay for you to be like, my experience wasn't great. But you don't have to, and I don't mean you personally, I mean people who have babies don't need to feel like they have to go, oh, but it was okay though, really. When actually if it wasn't, it wasn't. Like, and that's okay. It was your it, and if you say that it was rubbish, like that is yours and that's okay.
That's your story, and that's that.
Yeah, you don't need to go, oh, but I suppose you could see it as positive if blah, 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 when actually you don't really believe that. Like, that's okay. It's really nice to be reflective rather than trying to put the, the positive spin on something, actually. And I think that's what you've done. You've looked back and gone, yeah, that is what I reflect on it now, which is, about the decisions you made and the plan that you made, and that asking questions is really important. So, yeah, I think that's great. Thank you so much for sharing your story. It's always really personal, but really lovely when somebody, is able to share. And I think it always feels really good for both people. It feels really nice for me. Obviously, I feel really very privileged when I get to listen to people's really like quite intimate stories. But I hope that it feels good for you as well to be able to talk about
It
it.
does, it does. And I hope that it helps people as well to sort of listen to other people's stories and know that it's okay however you feel.
And maybe it's somebody who's going into a birth and it's really vital information to hear, how things can go. Or maybe it's somebody who's had an experience quite similar to you and goes, oh, okay, I really relate to that and I get it. And
Definitely.
I'm with you. So yeah, no, I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks again to Laura for sharing not only your birth story with us, but the experiences that you had with your two lost pregnancies, particularly in such tough times during COVID restrictions. I know so many people out there will be able to relate to how you were feeling in those moments, and I'm really thankful that you felt able to talk about that with me today. That is all from me this week. Thank you again for joining me. If you like what you heard today, you could share this episode or any of them with a friend. You could follow me on Instagram or Facebook. I am The Real Birth Podcast. You could rate and review or subscribe to my show on your podcast platform. Or if you're feeling particularly generous, you could buy me a coffee. The link to do this is in my Instagram bio, and it just keeps me going and is really appreciated. I am sending you all the love. Thank you very much. And I look forward to sharing another amazing birth story with you next Wednesday. Bye.